and let the record show that Greg Starnington is home with a sick child with chicken pox. And the rest of us here are itching. Just move ahead. Mike, do you want to continue your presentation today?
Yeah, sure, I'd like to, and if we can start with CAO.
Linda, would you like to make some opening comments, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record of the Dover Department of Administrative Services. You have a handout with transportation development on the top of it. I'll be speaking from that during a brief overview. The government's recommended revised budget for the Transportation Development Division is $54.8 million. This is a 60% increase over 97.99 OD. The reason is additional T21 funding of $19 million.
Yeah, we have it right here.
The representatives at the short end of the table don't have that document.
That's because they picked your books with you. You have them in. They were handed out previously.
What behind the ears?
I know, Senator.
Get that towel out and dry it up.
You're right. That's
the station. We've been here all day. They all
look
amazing. After a while, we all do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
double
cancer.
Got it. I'll be okay. You can continue.
I'll share mine with Representative Starr. Because we know how to work together as town.
You guys went off the diving board together, huh? All these
well, we're all wet behind here.
All look these funds. Okay. Go ahead, Linda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Continuing on, we were at the reason for the budget being larger than the 97.99 is additional B21 funding of $19 million. There are four policy option packages that we'll discuss in, or the agency will discuss in more detail later. They support the Government Livability Initiative by funding regional community solutions team staff for a variety of agencies, increase staff for asset management coordination, provide scenic byway grant funds, and increase staff for technical data analysis. The budget continues the planning and support policy and transportation data units of the division. The development of the recommended budget began with the legislatively adopted budget of $33.7 million. There was an e-board action adding $500,000 other funds for employee compensation. Of note, in the current service level budget adjustment was a $900,000 transfer to Transportation Development Access Management from the pilot program. Policy packages, package 1 here on Access Management Coordination Program, adds 4 transportation engineers to support development and reviews of road approach and utility permits, and the funding is from an existing services and supply budget. In the T21 project, policy package 114 spreads over several divisions, so what I'll be talking about is that part which applies to transportation development. To support the Community Solutions Team staff is $3.7 million. It goes to the Department of Environmental Quality, Housing, Land Conservation and Development, and Administrative Services. Musical positions in regional offices and the Salem Community Development Office. State planning and research funds are passed through the local agencies to assist in developing local government transportation system grants, and that is $4 million. There's an additional $11.3 million for planning, design, and research, and that total is $2 million. For implementation and construction, and that's $8.3 million. And for the Willamette Valley Livability Forum, $1 million. In options for change, the agency reduces other funds limitations for flexible service contracts, and the total for $350,000, and they reduced Transportation Growth Management Grant Program by $50,000, for a total of $400,000. Analysis, mapping, and data substitutes for permanent positions for temporary workers and contract workers. By doing this, the agency saves $24,500. Finally, getting to governor's revised, in our contract of 114, it was originally $70 million for the Phoenix Byways program. The revision transfers Phoenix Byway program from transportation development to highways, bringing it to $54.7 million. Total budget governor's revised.
All right, is there anything else? Questions? Representative Baxter?
I don't know if we should do this. I had a question about policy package 114.
Go ahead and ask it, and then we'll see if it's going to be covered in the presentation, and then we can address it there.
Well, I continue to have concerns about the community solutions team and the additional FTEs in all the departments that are being added as a result of the FTE. I'm wondering, is there an FTE increase in the transportation in ODOT as a result of the T21 dollars? I don't mind spending money to get federal match, but I feel like the purpose of the Community Solutions Team is to add efficiency in government by talking across lines. And I've talked to the governor's office several times and still don't have a lot of clarity. I asked them for some job descriptions, even what these community solutions people are doing, and it's still very vague. And so I'm trying to get something from DAS that says if it's additional FTE and or if it's going to be absorbed within existing funds, and this is just the authorization to get the grant.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, there are no Department of Transportation positions added. There are for other agencies, but not for the Department of Transportation.
About additional money, no additional money. If you get a 90% backfill, then if there's no additional positions and you're getting a 90% backfill for these positions, I'm trying to see where the savings is.
And let me try to describe it budgetary wise if I can, try to help you through it. What the representative is asking is that here is some money that you're working with on T21 funds to leverage some additional dollars. The concern, as I understood it, was what happens when the additional dollars come? Does that mean additional FTE? Is that a fair reflection of what you were trying to ask?
That was the first part.
That was the first part.
That was the answer.
Okay. And then the second part is, are you going to be backfilling using the grant monies to back out T21 funds? Is that accurate?
Are you going to use the T21 money since you're not adding any FTE? The federal dollars just come in and backfill that FTE position, I guess, is what I'm asking. So is there some cost savings associated with going out towards these T21 money? Because you're adding, I think there's 5 or 6 community solutions teams across the state, and then you have if you have 90% federal match dollars because you're not having an additional, where's that money going that would normally go for those employees?
Mr. Chair, I thought we knew what we should do is bring in a charting of the community solutions team so it brings it all together because the positions are not with us. But if there are funds, and we want to make sure we track through the funds, and we can do that for both the FTE and the funds and answer the representative's question, I think.
I think that would be very helpful because there's somehow the idea that some of these positions are going to remain in ODOT, and there's this nebulous group out here called Community Solutions that is meeting, and I think what the representative and I share that concern as well is how do we access information to get who has a clear, concise chain of command and where are those positions really, truly resting at. Senator Dukes.
My understanding is this is federal transportation money that is being removed from ODOT and sent to other agencies for a variety of things, not all of them directly transportation-related. For example, the housing people are housing field reps for the community solutions team. And my problem lies in the fact, I think the Community Solutions Team idea is a good one. I think the source of the funding is the mistake. It's sort of like we got more money from the feds this year, so we've got some extra free money, so we're going to scatter it around. And sending it to DEQ and LCDC and housing seems to me a strange way to spend transportation money that could be going on the road if we kept it at ODA. And I don't doubt that housing needs field reps. I just think that this is an illogical way to pay for them. So there are additional FTE in the package. They just go to other agencies and not to ODOT to do non-road things.
That's it, sir. Representative Starr. Senator Duke said what I was thinking better than I could have.
Well, I think you're beginning to see, Mike, that there is some serious concerns on the part of the subcommittee that we don't want to redirect highway dollars to a bunch of other activities just for the sake of spreading out some money because we have this potential windfall this session. So I think you have to start opening some dialogue with the committee members and getting the information necessary. Representative Beck.
Mr. Chair, if I can offer an alternative impression of the highway money for Senator Gates and others. And we have a highway trust fund that is severely limited, but the federal highway dollars, transportation dollars, are more flexible. And I think a lot of people who have been working transportation issues for the last decade have thinking has evolved to seeing the road system isn't just money into roads, and how when we have limited general tax dollars for roads, one of the ways to make more efficient use of the roads is figuring out how to put housing in places, for instance, senior housing. If it's located in the right place, there may be less burden on the roads. So, and a lot of the planning, the environmental consequences of road construction, if the environmental people at DEQ are somehow involved helping figure out how to do a better road project or avoid environmental problems, it will maybe lessen the cost of road construction later on. I think a more integrated approach to the transportation system is what people are aiming for, and that, I think that's reflected in the flexibility of the federal funds. We in Oregon have chosen not to utilize our gas tax dollars more flexibly, but I think we need to be open to seeing the transportation system as part of a, we've got to plan for it. We've got to make the road investments work better. And sometimes that's a housing decision, it's a zoning decision, it's an environmental quality decision. And so I encourage all of you to look more macro at our transportation dollars, particularly federal dollars, which are flexible.
Representative Patrick.
First of all, we have a community solutions team in our district, and that's not what they're doing. And so that's my concern. I don't feel like the governor, we're being asked to fund it, and I don't feel like, and I don't think it's ODOT. If this was the governor's baby, it's not ODOT trying to do it. It's what the governor's asked them to do. And if he wants us to birth this baby in all of our community, I feel like I got to have some kind of justification to do it. So it's not things, I'm interested in integration and all those kinds of things, but I want some justification about why it can't be done within the existing departments if it's for government efficiency, which is really what it, my understanding and the paperwork that I have on it is all about. And, you know, I don't know if we need to ask LFO to come do it or for someone from the governor's staff to come present and ask about the community solutions team, but I've had multiple meetings and I'm still dissatisfied with what's been proposed and how those money is going to be spent. And, you know, I'm not going to support shifting funds, not because it's against ODOT, but just because these community solutions teams, I don't have any justification. They have no centralized chain of command. I don't even know what kind of decisions they can make. It's unclear what kind of decisions they can make. You know, if we're just adding more FTEs so they can go back and talk to their various department heads, then it doesn't achieve anything to me. It's just crazy.
Well, let me say this. We've already had Greg Wolf from the governor's office come in when we were on Housing Community Services and talk about the Livability Initiative. I wanted him earlier on in transportation to come in and do the same thing. He requested that he be one of the last items on the agenda. So Mr. Wolf is in fact going to reappear back to this committee to talk about the governor's livability initiative. So those are very valid questions, and I would urge you to raise them when he does come back to the committee. Senator Yee.
During the public hearing, one of the city councilmen from Halsey said when they wanted some growth planning money for their transportation, they have to apply twice, once to transportation and once to land use. I mean, it doesn't sound right. So.
Mr. Chair, if we could, I think both elements will be covered in the presentation. If we can go through and see if those elements are covered there, and then if not, we'll come back. Number one and number two, we will get a charting of the funds and FTE that relate to the Community Solutions Team.
Why don't we try that, Senator? I think Craig Greenleaf is here to explain his department, and hopefully if he can, that can address some of the issues of the councilman from Halsey that told about the process of applying for the growth management fund. So why don't we try to move ahead in the overall presentation, and Craig, would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Sure. My name is Craig Greenleaf. I'm the Deputy Director for Transportation Development at ODOT. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll try and answer the questions that came out in earlier discussion as we chase our way through the discussion. Oregon has a nationally recognized program that brings state and local government together to build and manage an integrated transportation system. And to do this, we try and do the work in a manner that protects the existing investments that we've made, optimize the choices around future investments so that they gain the maximum leverage and benefit for the system. We try hard to resolve conflicts that are attendant in these questions very early in the process. We coordinate with the affected participants, both public and private, in order that we can answer those questions as thoroughly as possible. We try and deal with balancing the management tools that we employ in doing these things, and reconcile and apply resources in a manner that that gets the safety issues addressed and handled. And we try and make sure that we have used the best available data in order to guide those decisions. Many of these responsibilities have some connection to the work that's done in the Transportation Development Division of the department. Let me just broadly speak to the budget issues that we have within within TDD. The planning work that the agency does is largely housed within this portion of the budget. We, within ODOT, spend about 3% of the agency's budget on behalf of planning work. Of that 3%, the agency only retains about half of it. The other half of that money is given through grants and programs to local government, so that we end up as an agency retaining about 1.6% of the budget on behalf of the planning agenda. We have provided you with a brief overview and description of the various programs that are managed from the Transportation Development Division. In that work, we do systems planning work, which includes the long-range planning work that the agency does, and we'll go into that in some more detail in just a moment. We also do corridor planning work. Transportation and growth management program is run from this particular portion of the agency. We support transportation planning analysis, for example, modeling to try and calibrate what improvements are necessary. We do run the access management program, policy direction from this particular part of the organization. It also contains the research functions for the agency in terms of materials. This is the program that assisted us in getting the cathodic protection for bridges, the median treatment in the Lamont Valley area for the cable barrier, assist in crossover accidents, and so on.
Representative Schrader.
Question on the access management. Why is it that there's no one, there's the bulk of the group that's meeting now are people that have not a lot of basis in the community? There are very few real individuals that are community-based on this access management group that's meeting.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schrader, we did try and reach out to form a committee that was broadly representative of the interests that we have. We did we do have representatives from small business, from people who have a strong interest in the safety of the highway. We do have people who have other interests in terms of just trying to deal with pedestrian bike safety, and there are we did try and reach out and have a broad cross section. If you look at the representatives of the group, it's a very demanding process. We've been meeting full days, one day a week for most weeks. Have been having subcommittees in the intervening time. Sometimes it's hard for people to get. To commit that kind of time, but we did try and reach out and make sure that we had done a good job of handling that, and we will be going through the conventional processes of public hearings on rulemaking and so forth.
Craig, if I can follow up on that, I think maybe we're missing out in the translation of words here.
Okay.
If you heard Representative Patridge a few moments ago, he was talking about the local community solutions team, and then you're looking at this. And I think we're talking about two different animals. But it's being all blended into one. One is for planning, and one is for solutions. Isn't that a correct description? There's two different groups here that we're looking at. You're looking at planning, integration of planning with other activities.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would say that I think that we, if the planning work isn't aimed towards solutions, and if it isn't fully engaging the communities, then we have made a...
But the thing that Representative Patridge was saying, he said he had saw the community solutions team in action. It's representatives of agencies, but I've also seen them work, and nothing is given to them as decision makers. They can attend all the meetings they want. They can talk all they want. They can agree in principle all they want, but they have to run it up through the chain of command. So the chain of command is the one you're really talking about here, because the local community solutions teams, and I'll wait till Representative Patridge is back here again, but it's really not working out there in the community because nobody is vested with the power to make a decision. They talk to ODOT, and they say, well, geez, I've got to run it by my regional manager. My regional manager has to run it by the deputy state director, and deputy director has to run it by the state director. In the meantime, no solution is really found. Everybody's had a nice, good visit. Some recommendations have been suggested, but some of them get resolved and some of them don't. And I think this is the anti-feeling that a lot of people have looking at ODOT and saying, I can't penetrate this bureaucratic level to get to a decision maker. How do I get to a decision maker? Maybe what you're describing here is something that shows that the public can, in fact, interface with a true decision maker. I think that's, Representative Schrader, I think we're all frustrated here looking at this new pyramid, but how do you know you're going to get to a place where you can talk to somebody and can say yay or nay? I'd rather have you tell me no and I know what my options are, rather than saying, well, maybe, and dragging me on for 6 years, having me spend my own money, and then having you tell me later, well, no, we should have told you 6 years ago, but we didn't have the courage to tell you that. Now we're telling you no. And meantime, I've spent 6 years of my time, my money, and everything else going through this process. I think that's the frustrating thing that this committee is trying to get a handle on what you really identify as genuine solutions, and how do we reach those things.
I follow up on your comment?
Yes, Representative Schrader.
I agree to the center wholeheartedly, and I think this access management is a classic case in point. It was supposed to be user friendly. I've been working on that for 2 years. There's the wrong people involved. There's no one from local communities. I think one guy from Lincoln County or something is basically it. You have all the agency type. You have all the special interest lobby type groups. You need people that live in these communities to be at least 50% or 75% of this group, with a few staff or special interest group type facilitators to put in some of the technical details or background historical information that these local individuals don't know. The times you're meeting for this particular group during the middle of the day, there's no real people that can get to those meetings. There's no real people that can get to those meetings. ODOT, in this division in particular, has a tendency to think they set the policy. That's not the way the system's supposed to work. It is supposed to be the legislature or the communities that set the policy. You implement the policy. And that's a huge discussion item. That's a big item nowadays among all the policy administrators. They don't believe what I just said. Times have changed. They believe that they set the policy. And I'm going to argue strongly throughout this budget and to several others that that is incorrect. I know they feel like they know a lot more than the rest of us. They know what's best for us. And this is what aggravates the heck out of everybody. And I would just add to Senator Hannah's comments about the community solutions teams. I think the concept, like everyone else is saying, is probably a good idea. But it's not really a pyramid. What it is it's a circumvention. It's a way to circumvent the big agencies that are unresponsive. The governor's office has seen that it is difficult to get from point A to point B. So he's going in a roundabout way. The thing I object to is we're not removing some of the people he's trying to get around. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So there's some real serious problems. And your agency, this division in particular, has the potential for doing so much good for the local communities. And at every turn, the local communities have been thwarted. Citizens' ability to be involved in the system. I have tried to be an advocate for this agency, but I keep running up against stone walls, and I have been pushed in almost 180 degrees in the opposite direction. And that's, and you said if you're not communicating, you're making a serious mistake, if you're not really in crisis, well, you've made worse than a serious mistake. You've made a fatal mistake almost. And that's the reason you're getting beat up on the other side of this building. You're in danger of having the same problem over here.
Mr. Chair, maybe I can start a little bit of a response anyway. I hear what the representative is saying. That's certainly not the direction of the Department of Transportation under my limited experience and where the director and myself are going. So I apologize for the perception that exists there, but that's certainly not the direction we're trying to go. And as far as policy setting, we absolutely agree that it's working with the communities that and the people who live in those communities where the policy setting comes from. We don't feel, I mean, I don't see a perspective in myself or Grace that says we're setting the policy. We're trying to get the input for that policy.
But that's not what's happening. I understand we can talk about this for a cows come home, but that's not what's happening, Mike. I mean, the real bottom line here is you are setting policy. I've gone through six or seven different people that are supposedly the head of the TMB access management system. It's just been unbelievable to me how badly this process has been managed. One person's been moved out or moved on or turned over or whatever. And you're not, the bottom line is you've got a whole bunch of middle-level engineers and administrators that are not listening to what you're just saying. And until I see you guys able to crack the whip at that level, I mean, you're going to have some problems. It's not working.
I appreciate the communication. Maybe Craig wants to hear a little bit more about the specifics.
Yeah, if I could, Mr. Chairman, I think the points which I hear the committee addressing are exactly on point with the change in direction that we're trying to accomplish within the agency. I attended a community solutions team meeting in Medford, where the question which you raised, Mr. Chairman, was raised exactly by a Grants Pass city council person. Frustration amongst agencies, not just ODOT, with being unable to get to the decision making, and part of the design of what community solutions process is designed to accomplish is to put people closer to communities that do have the ability to forge the agreements that are necessary in order to carry things forward. That's part of what I think you will hear from the governor's office when we have a chance to speak to you about community solutions. It's a change of the way we do the business for the programs. I think that's fundamental to the objectives that we're trying to achieve here.
Greg, let me stop you right there, because that's the crux of the whole issue of a decision maker. Now, when my district manager of ODOT came out to a scene to determine whether a drain pipe should be put in or not, he says, I give you authority to go across this field and cut it and angle it off. Fine. It was done. Nobody made any row about it or anything else. It was a clear line of decision. Now if you go back to that same solutions team, they say, well, geez, I got to run it by my district manager and then my regional manager and then the deputy director in Salem. I'll get back to you with a response. You operated at a different time frame than John Q. Public. They have a sense of urgency out in the community, and rightfully so, because as long as the clock is ticking, they're burning money. Your agency sometimes doesn't quite feel that same sense of urgency until a politician, unfortunately, has to get involved and say, what's holding up the decision on this? Many times, poor decisions are rendered because of expediting a politician. I don't want that politician to be mad at me, so I'm going to go through, and they looked at it and they said, no, we're not going to do it. Not for justification, not for logic, not for reason, but because, no, we're not going to do it. Maybe the local people said, yes, this is what we want to do. Go ahead and push it as far as we can get it. This is a frustration. I think you're experiencing that frustration on this side of the table here this morning. It's been around all session in the House Transportation Committee. It's been around all session in the Senate Transportation Committee. And now it's finding its way down here with the Ways and Means. The system is broke. And it isn't working about getting people out in the community. And by calling it Community Solutions Team or anything else that you want to call it, and say we're going to interface with your constituents to resolve conflict, it isn't working. Not until you put the actual decision maker out there that says yay or nay. I don't want to talk to some 10th level bureaucrat that has to go through 9 levels to get to a decision maker. I want to talk to the person that can say yes or no. And this is the frustration that this committee, I think, is trying to express here this morning. You have a lot of unhappy campers out there. And it just wasn't created yesterday or last week. This has been going on for years. No, I don't know. Maybe the other committee members might have a different experience, but my frustration level is very high. I'll be real candid with you. And I'm not trying to bash ODOT, but somebody somewhere needs to trust that local engineer out in Medford to make a decision and stay by it, versus saying, no, we got to run it from Medford to Roseburg to Salem to Timbuktu, and then we'll let the Medford guy know, because the Medford guy knows best. He deals with it day in and day out. And all he wants is to make a decision, and he can't, because of the chain of command and rules and everything. So when you talk about a community solution team, great. But invest with some authority to say yes or no.
Mr. Chair, all I can say from my standpoint is that's exactly what we're trying to push. In my limited time of transportation, is trying to push down a decision emergency is decentralized. So we totally agree. I don't know if Craig has any follow-up for that.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I just echo what you've heard from Mr. Marsh. I think that's exactly what we are attempting to do. I think there's a strong recognition of the issue. I think we're trying to do it. I'll share with you that I've spent a good chunk of my career at local government, and I understand the character of the problem very thoroughly. I'm working hard to try and effectuate the changes that are necessary in order to correct those.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have been out of the office or away from the dais for the last few minutes, but I have been listening to the ongoing exchange, and I would like to just comment with regard to the community solutions issue, if I may. Having served as a member of a community solutions team, where we had an issue that we grappled with for, let's see, it passed our LCDC and the other folks back in 1972, shortly after it was in LCDC, we as a community solutions team participated as a county commissioner with the city managers for the city managers for the cities that were involved with this in part it was a transportation issue, in part it was a environmental issue, and part of it's a housing issue, and part it had a little of each of those things. And I just want to express my gratitude for the, if it did no other good, but it did a lot more good, if it did no other good, the folks that came with power, endowed with power, if you will, from on high, Salem, came down to Ontario and sat us all down and said, you know, let's have you define for us the problem, and then with their ability to step away and see the forest and see what it really looked like, then those people who had the experience working in the field in housing and the environmental issues and the transportation was probably the big, it was a transportation issue, that was the biggest part of the fight. OEDD spent the money to help fund the facilitation, if you will. But we found that, number one, the solution that we had come up with that they had thought would work in 1972, and we've been drifting away from that, we found that the solution in 1972 was probably still the best solution to take care of the problem. The problem was that it had gotten about twice as large at that particular point, so they still needed two solutions to what we were thinking was a one solution problem. So, and incidentally, and maybe Mr. Marsh could correct me, I think that is all in the process now of getting finalized and resolved, and it would have occurred much more rapidly had we stayed with the true community solutions approach. So, I don't want to address the funding issue nor the mechanism of how it's manufactured and built at this particular point, but I do want you to know that in this particular case, the community solutions really brought the community together to discuss the true problem, and we feel like it did in fact come up with solutions, and then we were able to go to the agencies that had the fiscal ability to address the solution, and they said yes. It's been identified by our teams as a problem, and yes, we'll put it on the program to get the work done. And now the work has been done. So I wanted to get that in the record that there are benefits to a community solution team, and I've served on one, and it worked.
I just, if I could respond, that that's how it's supposed to work, but we're hearing from the committee concerns where it's not working like that, or at least perceived as not working that way. We'll be working back to find out about those and reconcile them with the direction that I think we're trying to get to.
I would appreciate it, because you feel the frustration on this committee, and as I said, I've experienced it all, especially on the Senate Transportation Committee, the House Transportation Committee, as we tried to ask for some information, and we feel like the information you bring back is not the information. Maybe we need to communicate better. I'll agree that I'm probably not articulate on a lot of things, so if I'm not, ask me my interpretation of what it is, but we'd really like to have some more information on the community solutions team. And I think it'd also be helpful to show us where the real decision makers are. The person that says yes or no and how much power they're vested with, rather than saying, yeah, we have this community solutions team in place, but nobody is appointed to make a decision.
Mr. Chairman, we'll be glad to follow that up and respond to that question. And at this point, I'll probably go on with the page of the presentation. I'm looking at page 2 of the overview document that we put together. And what this tries to do is lay out the basic diagram about the relationships that exist amongst some of these efforts around transportation planning. By statute and by requirements of the legislature, we are obligated to create an Oregon transportation plan. And we have done that, and that is adopted by the commission. We have also, to carry those forwards, have copies of and adoptions of the highway plan, aviation system plan is being updated, and other plans to carry those aspects forward in a more detailed and mode-specific manner. When we drop into the third major box there, this is where obviously there are coordination efforts at each of these levels, but particularly when we get into the city and county transportation systems plan work, the corridor plan work that we do, the plans which metropolitan planning organizations put together, there's an awful lot of dialogue about what the characteristics of the solution look like in those particular instances. That is an in-depth discussion about how this system ought to work. We are trying to build consensus around what the right solutions look like and forward the answers that will work in those communities and that are consistent with the comprehensive plans in those communities. For instance, we have been working on a corridor plan for Highway 26, and this has involved some discussions about the North Plains area and how we should deal with various considerations of whether or not the urban growth boundary should be expanded in a particular area. And that discussion represented there were about 4 different major alternatives that the city was looking at, all of them about the same scale. 2 of those alternatives had fairly significant transportation costs attached to them. 2 of them didn't have as significant a transportation costs attached to them. We were able, through the work that was happening in that corridor plan, to be able to express that concern to the community, and I think that that's the kind of thing that we are hoping to achieve through the discussions that we have on corridor plans, and would be looking to try and find those kinds of solutions that are mutually beneficial to all the parties.
Senator Dukes.
As you looked at that, was part of your consideration the original metro plan to double the size of the city of North Plains?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, that is among the things that was on. In the case of North Plains, they have to coordinate with Metro in order to deal with the urban growth boundary expansion issues. This particular area has been
because of community interests that were expressed in North Plains, they have had some interest in looking at expansions as well. ODOT has been a participant, but not a driving force behind the discussions that have been happening at Metro about those issues.
The question was more specific as to whether that plan from Metro that has since been discarded to double the size of North Plains was part of your discussion. It sounds like it was. My concern is Metro did abandon it after heavy protest. The city of North Plains didn't want anything to do with it. And one of my concerns as we merge the two is that we not go up the planning and highway and other things, that we not go out looking for trouble or not start taking sides or lining up transportation decisions to set up future land use decisions. And if that was a piece of that discussion, it's off the table. It's not on the table. There is no reason to believe that the locals in North Plains will accept it any sooner than the people in Scappoose will accept it, which Metro also wanted to double. I believe that land use and transportation need to be merged, but I think we need to make absolutely sure that we're not doing it in such a way as to prejudice future land use decisions.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Groups, I think that we are very careful not to be the driving factor in this. We are trying to inform the decision making that would be going on about these issues, that the transportation implications, if there are some, are clearly on the table and be able to be in the mix of decision factors that people use in reaching the decisions they reach.
I'm curious to find out whether the 26th corridor plan comes out with enough capacity recommended to handle the doubling of the city of North Pines.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, there were among those alternatives, there were ones that clearly demanded significant investments that would have, in order to make the certain of those considerations work. There were others that didn't demand that. That was the basis of the input that we provided. Mm-hmm. We haven't calibrated the corridor plan in that particular case to deal with a major expansion in that area, because that wasn't necessary based upon what's been happening with the urban growth boundary discussion. But we were able to introduce the cost implications of the one alternative to the other. That's the way we think we should participate, not to try and direct a specific outcome. So, anyway, this is an attempt to try and give you a kind of an overview of what happens with the various work that we do. And in summary, we're trying to do a better job of organizing our work in a manner that reflects the comprehensive plans adopted by local government and do the things necessary in our corridor plans to make the best informed decisions that we can. The organization chart, which is on the next page, gives you an overview of the three major sections that we have within the transportation development area: planning, policy, and data. We've spoken mainly about the planning side of the organization. In the transportation data area, this is where we carry the information around crash reporting and various accident rate issues. It's also where we have the geographic information system responsibilities housed. It is where much of the data functions for the whole department are located.
Representative Schrader.
In the policy package for that, basically it's like you're saving some money, but did I read this right? You're saving money by hiring some more people, or are those people you're eliminating?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schrader, we are doing this work right now through consultant contracts, temporary help, overtime, and similar techniques. We think that we are in a position to save money by hiring the FTE because the work is of an ongoing character, and for that reason, we think we can be more cost-effective by putting people into that role on a permanent basis. So we would be adding FTE, but the total result of the of that particular effort would be reduced expenditure for the agency.
I hope we sure look at closely at that. That almost sounds like a contradiction in terms. I mean, you've got 3,000 people in this agency, and to hire two more there and two more in a different, much more on A portion of the package, I'm interested. And it sounds okay, but I'm sure I could be pleased with that somewhere.
Let me ask a question I'm not sure Linda Gilbert might have the answer. Are these some of the T21 funds that are being moved around to accommodate this, or is this just coming out of your base budget?
Mr. Chairman, this comes out of the base budget. This is a base budget type action. These are not T21 fund positions.
So is it partially being done now?
Mr. Chair, what's being done now is that the money in the budget is used to pay for temporary overtime and contract staff. That would be eliminated, and instead there would be permanent positions to do the same work at a cost savings of around, I think, $43,000.
Thank you.
I don't know if this is the right place, but it's a question I wanted to get answered. So if it's not the right place, feel free to fill it in whenever you get to it. I was curious as to why, with approximately 1,000 people who do engineering on the ODOT staff, we need an additional 4 in order to be able to handle the Access Management Coordination Program, which I believe in the governor's budget is about $20 million to buy out access rights.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, I think I'll just go to that issue right up, because here is the basic story that we have been hearing in our conversations with communities, with the development community, is that we don't have the right kind of capacity to address access management issues, so as a development proposal comes forward to the agency, we are dealing with people who don't have the right experience at the table, can't negotiate to the conclusions that the committee was speaking to earlier, and
the other people,
the ODOT people, are not at the right engineering technical competence to deal with the questions that are being asked in the access management environment. There.
It'd be cheaper to add some training to some of those 1,000 people that you've got rather than hiring a formulary?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, we have found that we need to add engineering competence in other ways within the organization, and this is one of the places where we don't think we can train the people we have in place today to the level of expectation about what we're hearing in terms of the exchanges across the table with the development community and with local government. And this is one of the contributing factors to delays in decisions that aren't as carefully considered as they should be. And it is our intent to actually locate these particular staff within regions, not within TDD, so that they're in a position to more directly work with the communities in hammering out the access management answers that are necessary.
If some of the ladies' expenses, will you need more than 4?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Groups, the main issues that come from Senate Bill 86 would actually have to do with higher levels of expenditure to deal with compensation. It wouldn't necessarily mean that we have more complicated engineering issues around access needs, but rather compensating applicants in a wider array of circumstances than is the case today.
He assumes more people would apply for access under 86 because it would now be a property right of theirs, and they, if they didn't, if they failed to get the access, they could get compensation. So I assume that would encourage more of them to apply.
Chairman, Senator Groots, it's hard to know exactly what attract how much Senate Bill 86 would attract in terms of new applications. That is a possible consequence of the bill. I'm now dealing, Mr. Chairman, with page 4 of the overview that I provided to the committee. We have been talking around some of the issues and program needs that we've had already this morning. Let me just amplify on a couple of points here. Certainly, we have issues that arise out of our implementation of the highway plan, which recently adopted. That plan provides additional flexibility and different treatments than was possible under the 1991 highway plan, and we would expect that there are going to be work to be done with local governments in implementing that highway plan. We have spent some time this morning on access management policies. Those policies are being worked at several different levels. They are addressed in part in the highway plan. They are the discussions that we had earlier about the rulemaking that has surrounded access management are also going on. We have also done an examination of our own work habits and practices inside the agency and have identified a number of improvements that we think are necessary to improve the agency's performance around access management. They go to the heart of a lot of the comments we heard earlier this morning. We had touched on the issues of what we would hope to do in terms of staffing that at a higher level so that we have more professional capacity to deal with the complicated issues that surround access management. And certainly, we're attentive to the issues of private property rights that the legislature has been addressing in the context of a lot of the access management decisions that are going on under the substantive bill discussions about this issue as well. We've identified a few more of the things that we have an expanded responsibility for research under the T21 program. We are continuing to implement the
Representative Starr.
Thank you. You just briefly mentioned the research programs under T21, and I was looking in the program budget, and you had this one little paragraph about custom project requests for data are increasing. Just curious if you can talk a little bit about that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, this program is actually located with transportation data, and we have a number of standard reports which we issue on a fairly regular and consistent basis and reporting around certified mileage, accident data, and so forth. What we are finding is that the composition of that work is moving, however, and that for example, issues that surround salmon and similar things are requiring us to use more detailed information than has been the typical case. So we are less able to, the composition of the work is moving to be more exacting about trying to develop specific mapping for salmon habitat or dealing with accident data in a particular section of the highway, looking, for example, at safety coordinates in a lot more detail. Those kinds of more specialized pieces of work than I think has been the history of the agency. It's been a more global, more general character in terms of the data.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Yes. Who are the customers who are asking for those requests? In this one paragraph, it says in 94 you had 3,100 requests, in 97 you had 5,560 requests, and you had 7,000 requests. missed by any customers. Who's asked? Who are asking for those?
There are, there are several different customers bases that ask for those questions. We have requests primarily for regions. Perhaps they are looking at trying to look at the particular issues of segments of highway in that particular region, or they're dealing with project level detail that require that.
With ODOT.
In some cases it is ODOT. In other cases it is local government, because we keep information and data around the whole of the system, not just the state highway portions of the system. So there is information that they request around conditions and so forth for local portions of the system as well. We work with the state police. They, for example, will want to deal with enforcement issues and trying to look at areas where making sure that there's an alignment between the areas that have accident frequency or other issues around enforcement that deserve special attention. They're trying to leverage the time and energy that they spend. So they do that both in concert with the state police and with local police agencies. So those are some examples. That isn't comprehensive, but that's sort of an indication of some of the kinds of things that we have.
Thank you.
We have on also note on page 4 that we have recognizing that we need to be more deeply engaged in the work of local government at the time that they're looking at the comprehensive plans related to periodic review and development review issues. We are seeing more complicated questions arising out of development review issues in local governments, in some cases because there's a dwindling supply of land within the urban growth boundaries, or that the sites that remain available for development have more complicated problems attached to them. We are also have tried to put renewed emphasis and continue to focus on the issues of cost control and look to try and improve our performance in terms of both cost containment avoidance and being able to apply more efficient decision making around each of these areas. We have also put an aim in within our research program generally to try and make sure that we do have making best use of the resources that we have and make sure that they're cost effective in their application. We do see the growth pressures in the state is affecting our business fairly significantly. Travel volumes are increasing, vehicle miles traveled are increasing, population is increasing, and those are having multiple effects on the agency, including our engagement with local government over development review issues. We have been working with local governments in the development of transportation system plans, and we have about 200 transportation system plans that we are expecting to be generated out of the work that we have here. I've given you an example of some of the outcomes that we have produced, the timeliness and percent of on-schedule work that would happen within our research unit is one of the areas. We have similar kinds of information in terms of our ability to produce the other data requests that we have on an on-time basis. This is, directed in a manner that's consistent with what you heard from Jeff Hines in terms of what he thought best place for aiming our performance measure work would be. As you can see on the bottom of that page 6, we have a number of transportation plans underway. We are continuing those, working with local governments, and many of them are moving toward adoption now. This graph continues to change almost on a weekly basis. In terms of the accomplishments that we have within the 97-99 biennium, We did adopt the highway plan. We've got corridor plans underway for most of the key corridors in the state. There's significant work underway with respect to transportation system plans. We produced and published a report on freight. We initiated the access management work of the agency in the rulemaking context. We have funded transportation growth management work, and I don't know at this point whether this is the place we want to go to some of the transportation growth management discussion, but there was a question which Senator Yee raised earlier about having to apply twice. There is a single application made to the Transportation Growth Management Program. As I understood the conversation in that discussion earlier, and we will follow this up with Senator Yee, there isn't a second application for under the Transportation Growth Management Program. Now that there are other grant programs within the Department of Land Conservation and Development, which also support the work. So there are, I think there was a little bit of misunderstanding about that point, but we only have a single form and application process.
Okay. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Relative to the planning and the issue of freight moving up and down our interstates, there's various proposals of additional potential corridors in the state. And you try and project out 20 years into the future. Have you anticipated what I-84 may look like between, say, Pendleton and Portland if there's a destruction of some of the dams in there? I understand it would be about 1,200 semis a day, assuming that they're drained from pollutants and the other wood products and so forth coming out of northern Idaho and the prairies would still be feasible to ship out of the country at that point. Have you tried to anticipate what maybe the freight situation would look like between the drop-off point and the Portland area once it's loaded on the truck?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I don't know whether or not the corridor plan has expressly spoken to that particular issue. I know that it's been an issue. We have a freight advisory committee which works regularly with the director on trying to deal with freight issues, and certainly freight movements along that corridor are among the points that have been discussed in some detail, and concerns about this not only in the context of the removal of dams and the implications that come from that, but also even pipeline locations, and because partly what's happening is that we're moving oil, gas, up, and the return trip is one that's tends to be weak, or other agricultural products. So that is definitely an issue that we're trying to pay attention to and trying to address.
I guess the issue is of concern to me is that will our highway system accommodate that's the equivalent of about one more truck every minute along the freeway system? At what point do we anticipate that it will no longer accommodate those needs?
I will try and follow that question up and get you a more specific answer. Let me move to the budget and just sort of try and bring this to the point. I realize we're at the end of the time we were expecting to have this morning. As you heard earlier, the primary difference in this budget comes really from the T21 dollars and from the additional expenses that we'll be having both in that program and the research program. We spoke briefly about some of the community solution team issues there. Just a reminder, we don't have the FTE within this budget. We do have the dollars that support those programs that come from the C-21 support, and that is money that, as we understand it through the T-21, is not quite as flexible as some other sources of money. That is, there are some limits on this particular section of the T-21 dollars that might not have as universal a flexibility in terms of being able to be applied to project-specific issues. So it's a constraint that we're operating under. It's a way to try and get these resources applied to support the Community Solutions Team work. We've talked briefly about our desire to...
Excuse me, Craig. I represent a spreader.
Quick question on how many FTE is that supposed to support them? I missed that part of the presentation.
Okay. There are FTE contained within Housing and Community Services. That's four. There are CLCD as four FTE. CEQ has five. And there are DAS positions that would have, there are six DAS positions as well.
Thank you.
Now, when you say DAS positions, they're not assigned to any agency or what? The other ones were assigned to DEQ and LCDC and what are these others?
They would be in a role of coordination amongst the agencies. The attempt is to try and address the questions that I heard the committee addressing. That we do something to bring a unified view of state agencies to the solutions that we put on the table, and that we have the support and acceptance of those solutions by all the agencies represented.
Sure, follow up.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's just kind of inconceivable to me that, and especially, number one, that we need any gas people, that these agencies are not mature enough to talk to themselves without, you know, someone shepherding them along. And number two, I'm sorry if I'm being a little on the muscle.
No.
But number two, the DEQ needs any more people to do this. I'll almost buy into the fact that the housing people maybe need, maybe DLCD a little bit. But it's just really, I know it's not your fault or anything, I understand it, Craig. But it's just a little tough to swallow.
Representative Passage.
Sure. I know that you've asked Greg Wolf from the governor's office to the governor's proposal to look at these. Is LFO going to look at, has LFO done anything to look at the Community Solutions Team kind of as a whole instead of in terms of the individualized budget?
Chair, Representative Pettis, I have not. We did do an early analysis of the Governor's Visibility Initiative when we did our analysis of the total budget. Since then, I'm not aware that we've done anything in particular on that issue I have in context of this budget. So.
Can we take a look at what's been done? I mean, I don't know if it is it within the...
If you don't mind, I'd like to leave it until right at the last when Mr. Wolf comes in from the governor's office. Let's deal with what LFO has done, what the governor's office has done, and we're going to have housing, economic development, ODOT, all in here together, and hopefully we'll get somebody singing from the same page.
Oh, sure.
Representative Starr.
If I can just follow up on that conversation, what might be helpful from my perspective is to have that whole proposal in a separate bill where we can fund it. I don't know, that may not be possible because it is funded out of these other budgets, but to take it out, put it by itself, and let's have that policy decision.
I think we can identify it separately, but I think it's contained within each agency's bill on their appropriation. So,
if they have to vote no on every one of the budgets because they don't like that one piece of the pie, that's just, I'm going to throw that out.
Okay. We'll see what we can do to try to break that out or identify it for you so you can see what the...
Mr. Chair, what we'll do is come up with a list and it shows what's where, so it makes it very clear for the committee to be able to either make that move or whatever the move is, so you're clear about what's happening, both with the funds and with the FTE, and then the committee can determine how they're like.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I did want to make clear when it says Department of Administrative Services, it's not implying that it's got a budget analyst in there or an accountant. I think what they're talking about is those Department of Administrative Services positions are actually speaking for the governor's office. They are similar to the fact that there are funds within Department of Administrative Services relating to forest issues, related to salmon issues. Those, some of those are actually DAF funded positions, and that's what the example here. They are not administrative positions in terms of accountants or whatever.
Okay. Craig, could I ask you to maybe summarize?
Well, I'm at the conclusion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
So I think you have hit on what I have understood to be the key areas of the budget within transportation development, and we will try and follow up on those specific points that we make commitments to you to cover. We did. I guess I did not touch upon the specific issues in the other talks that we didn't talk about. We did indicate that there were other places where we were actually reducing services, and those are contained within POPs 119 and 121. We talked about the access management coordination, which we believe is really responsive to the issues that I've been hearing committee talk about in terms of having more, higher levels of engineering expertise, being able to be deployed at the region level, being able to directly address the access management questions that are coming out. We have the other increases that are in those tops that have to do with research and the broad community solutions team issues, and additional resources that we would be expecting to gain through that particular part of T21. In some cases, these probably will be dollars that will flow through to local government, of which ODOT will act as an agent on behalf of these dollars on behalf of
Craig, government. I don't disagree with this. Those people are already out in the field. All you have to do is let the leash out a little bit further for them so that they can make decisions without having to come back to the regional, the district, and the state manager. And I think once you let the leash out, and things are begin to happen, and you'll see that the system functions quite well if you trust somebody. And I guess this system begins with a little trust. We're trusting you, but you're going to trust your employees. Because your employees want to do what's right out there, but they're afraid that every time they make a decision, going to be overruled by Salem. And that's the perception they're passing on to my constituents. I think that's part of the frustration that we're expressing here this morning, is give them a little bit of latitude. This is a time to be innovative and creative, not restrictive. And as an example, a good senator from Washington County brought in the smart jitney system. Why are we having to introduce a bill that ODOT should have said, this is a new type of transportation mode. Let's go to work and see if we can start it on a pilot project and get it going. Why do we have to have another bill to tell you to do something when you ought to be exploring all the alternatives? I don't know. It boggles my mind why we're not involved in more, and like Representative Schrader said out of frustration a few minutes ago, it's like the agency feels like it's directing policy rather than the policymakers directing you to implement policy. So I hope you have a better frustration or feeling of frustration on this side of the table, because my anxiety level is beginning to rise. Senator Hughes,
it's been real quiet during the phone meeting. I'm sure you relate. But
I'll take a nice aggression.
I'm going to be quiet. I'll say this calmly, too. Earlier it was stated that sometimes a politician gets involved and things happen. And to be very honest, I have actually seen the exact opposite. When a politician gets involved, everything possible is done to block anything happening, which is why we have to come and do specific bills to get specific things done so that when we leave here 6 months after we've been here, it doesn't get all turned around, misunderstood. We try to put budget notes in budgets. They get ignored. You know, it's just, it, while it might work for some politicians, I guess if you're the right persuasion, maybe you get some action, but the kind of action that I've seen is actually retribution, and it doesn't feel too good, which is why I think there's probably a lot of discussion in this body now, you know, about frustration, and we really should be setting the policy, and it's like brick walls and ships that don't move. I understand government doesn't move too fast, and it shouldn't, and you know, it's made that way. That's how it's made. So we can, in some cases, move slowly when it's called for, but with the kind of technology that we have, all kinds of different methods to look at in with pertaining to transportation, solutions that are new solutions to old problems, and some using some of the old solutions. There's still 98% of the travel is on the actual roads, and so we should be increasing and enhancing that travel, whether we're using technology or whatever, on roads. But I just wanted to say, sometimes it works for politicians one way, the other, and it works the other way too.
Well, I've had both experiences too. Mm-hmm. I've had times when I was able to help resolve something, but I've had other times kind of payback for calling your local senator.
Yeah.
So, Mike, I hope you understand. We're not trying to pick on you personally.
No.
Mr. Garrett,
but this has been ongoing long before you got there.
Yeah.
And we're hoping for some change for the positive. And we know that you're going to give it the utmost effort to do so.
I appreciate that, Mr. Garrett. I just want to make sure it's clear that we are working within a public process, but I can guarantee these members, if there's a budget note, if there's a direction that comes out of this committee, it's not going to be ignored. And I appreciate the discussion, and I think what we're trying to say is that we are moving to get that decentralized decision-making, and I think the effort that Greg is going in that direction, we're certainly listening.
Hey, Representative Stark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate this opportunity before we leave this section of the transportation budget, and it's kind of dovetails into what Senator Cusab was talking about. As I read through this, I'm a little concerned because I perceive a bias in here away from developing on-the-ground road projects toward more other modes of transportation, whether it's transit or managing growth or reducing driving. And I'm looking in this on the first page of your program budget here. It says I'm talking about developing plans and that they support Oregon benchmarks through efforts to reduce driving, manage growth, and promote alternatives to auto travel. Well, you're a little bit selective and you're choosing as a benchmark. There's other benchmarks in there to talk about reducing congestion. Reducing congestion, in my mind, isn't just anti-automobile, it's additional road capacity. That's just one thing. The next page, planning and support. Say your goals include developing efficient transportation systems, maintaining livability, and fixing scarce funds. If you're going to have efficient transportation systems, part of that livability, which is the next phrase, is less congestion, which means more road capacity, more lane capacity to get people where they want to go. That's what we're talking about. We talk about stretching scarce funds and bring forth a budget that puts forward $15 million in livability, so-called flexible funds. Well, those scarce resources could be put on the livability side, which is reducing traffic, reducing congestion, and increased lane capacity on the highway. I'm just concerned that this is the place where we plan our transportation system, and they come at it from a point of view that is helpful to a narrow part of our populace that uses transit and without looking at the broader picture, that the fact of the matter is that a vast majority of people in this state drive their cars, and they're going to continue to drive their cars, and that we need to find a way to make it so that they're more able to do that. And if you talk about livability, traffic congestion is is the one thing that hurts that the most. And you can talk about, well, get people out of their cars, run on the buses, or onto the light rail, or have people live where, closer to where, and that's all fine and good, but the reality is that's not the reality out there. The reality is people get in their cars, and they drive to work, and they drive to store, and they drive their kids to school, and that's the reality. So we need to have a focus not on diverse modes of transportation. We need to recognize that on the ground, people get in their cars and drive. And that's not going to change. And we've got to move away from this idea that we can manage this and through land use and through public transportation. And I support public transportation. Don't get me wrong. I think there's a necessary part of that in our whole system. But the focus has been on that rather than the rest of us. And I'm really concerned. This is an important part of this budget. This is where they implement these plans. This is where they suggest strategies to get these plans done. Another section here analyzes the transportation systems to help guide which projects are funded in the SIF. Well, that's a significant responsibility. Very significant. If your recommendations to the OTC are where which projects get funded and you have a bias towards land use decisions and pedestrian-oriented development and these other transit-oriented development type situations, that's concerning to me. When I look in my district, we have significant on-the-ground lane capacity needs. We have exploding growth in my area, and we're talking about transit-oriented development, we're talking about pedestrian-friendly development, we're talking about a light rail that costs over almost $1 billion that serves a significantly small portion of our society. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me this opportunity.
I would like to echo a lot of the same comments with our son and daughter-in-law and grandkids who live out in Cornelius. And there's two ways, TV Highway or Highway 26. And I thought I knew what gridlock was in Southern Oregon, but I hadn't seen gridlock until I went one way on Highway 26 and came back on TV Highway. So I think I understand very clearly what the representative was saying, is we need to look at lane capacity because not everybody is getting on light rail and riding light rail. But Representative Patrick?
I'd just like to say, while I agree that we need to build more lane miles and we need to address some of those issues, I also think, too, the more that I've been around government and trying to do some of the problem solving is, until you reach some point of critical mass, you don't get people on mass transit systems. You don't get people on the light rail. You know, I spent 2 summers in D.C. Nobody has their own cars. Their metro system functions effectively. Some of those kinds of things. I'm not saying that's the end-all, be-all, but I think also, you know, I think it's been helpful to part of my community in Medford to do some of this long-term planning and look because, you know, we're also faced with the same types of people who are saying, let's not expand the city, let's shut it down, no more the no-growth kinds of things. And I think it's a very delicate balance that we're trying to do, and we're working toward there. We're working towards some more walking types of communities and spreading out some of our development in terms of where some of the commercial development is next to some residential development, so it's not all centralized. And I think there's a lot of situations where we do need more lane miles, and you know, public transit and mass transit isn't going to solve it all. But I think that we have to, when we look at it for policy, we can solve some of those things too.
Okay, Senator Gutab.
Thank you. We can go on record here that Medford doesn't need anymore, and Washington County does. And so we'll take those lane miles, a lot of them.
That's the point. My U-Haul truck is still waiting.
That's right.
I'll
bet.
It
is what you said, Representative. Well, you said reaching a critical mass is, I don't think that there are some people that want to be like Washington, D.C., but there are a lot of people in Oregon that don't want to be that way. And if it was a mindset from the mid-70s in the Portland metropolitan area that has continued. And frankly, there are people that just don't want to be socially engineered out of their cars. And the lifestyle, I was a single mother for a number of years. And I did go downtown to an office and then back to the daycare center the moment I got, you know, off of work. So the possibility at one time in my life of being able to use a system, either the bus or the light rail, was for a short period of time. However, I will tell you, and then what the light rail, what the people will answer is that you build a community right there near light rail. In order for me to use that, though, one of the things I remember is, let's see, I had to stop at the grocery store, the dry cleaners, the daycare, but well, let's put all that right by the light rail. Well, that is a nice, it's a nice dream, but it is a dream. And I don't think it works for people. It just, it doesn't work. And so for those people, it doesn't work. Then when you get to a time in your life when your profession puts you in your car to have to go from one appointment to the next appointment to the next appointment. It isn't really, you can't use a mass transit system. So it works for some, but for the number of people that it works for, it just has shown it's not that. And you can't in Hillsboro walk or get to Intel campuses by walking. So I understand that the idea might have been good, and we have reached a critical mass that needs to get around, all right. But we don't seem to be able to get them into the mass transit mode.
The senators are probably going to be on their call in just a few moments because the session began at 10.
Call the Senate.
Okay. What I'd like to announce is Monday we'll meet at 8:30. At 8:30 on Monday. And if committee meetings continue to take up additional time and floor sessions begin earlier, what the chair suggests is that we might have to start our meetings at 8 o'clock. So let's go ahead and continue on 8:30, and it's just a notice that we need to be here in a timely manner. Thank you. We're adjourned until Monday.
Thank you.